turn then to Luke 19, verses 29 to 38. St. Luke's account of Palm Sunday. One of the interesting initial things about St. Luke's account, however, is that he doesn't say anything about the use of palms on this occasion. Actually, St. Luke has a number of interesting omissions in this regard, and a number of interesting elements that other Gospels simply don't make reference to themselves. All four Gospels, of course, speak of Jesus' final, sometimes called triumphant, entry into Jerusalem. Each one, however, is rather distinctive, and each evangelist is rather distinctive in his own presentation of the event. And so it's instructive for us to be particularly mindful of these particular elements of the text as we read along, as we attempt to wrestle with the precise literary and theological intent of the particular evangelist who happens to be speaking of the event. So let's take a look at verses 29 to 38 of Luke 19. Verse 29 begins with kai egenetou, a somewhat common Semitism, it seems, for Luke, who's fond of Septuagintal things, expressions. And it came to pass, we might translate this expression, as he approached or drew near to Bethphage and Bethany, to the mount which was called Elion of Olives, or some have even translated just Olivet. Ta kalumen on there is the adjectival use of the present tense participle. The main verb is an aorist verb, so we should translate the participle same time as the main verb, with the same time sense as the main verb, not then which is called olives or Olivet, but which was called olives. He sent a pestelen duaton matheton, two of the disciples. He doesn't say which two. And said, legon, hip agate, go, eis tein kat ehnante komein, to the opposite village, en he in which eis paru ohmenoi huresete. It's an interesting participle there. Eis paru ohmenoi. You might just go with what Veltz calls the old weasel translation. In which entering you will find. But if you wrestle a little bit with what that participle might be doing, you might consider the temporal force of a participle. After you enter, you will find. You might even just kind of go with Veltz's, I think he calls it the bang bang participle, which just kind of indicates sequence. You get a string of things in sequence, and perhaps all we should do is just indicate the sequence in as simple a fashion as possible, in which you will enter and find a polon, a colt. There's a very interesting thing going on here, too. It indicates that they will find a colt, but doesn't really say what kind. The other Gospels specifically indicate that this is a foal of an ass, of a donkey, but it doesn't really seem to say here what kind, just that it's a colt. And it's a colt dedemenon, bound. We probably don't have time to talk about all the participles, so I'll just kind of say this is probably a supplementary participle, saying more about the finding of the colt They won't just find a colt, they'll find a colt in a state of being bound. The perfect passive participle there, dedamenon. On which, ephon, no one of men, udes anthropon, ever popate, has sat, ekathesen. And lusantes, kai lusantes, the weasel translation is tempting here, loosing it, bring, agagete, the aorist imperative there. Actually, again, you might think of Veltz also suggests on occasion the participles simply derive their time sense and force from the main verb. And if we take this lusantes in this sort of fashion, then it just might be functioning with the same time sense and force, that is to say, imperatival force, as the imperative there, agagete. So you might translate lusantes as if it were an imperative, loose, and bring it. Verse 31, kai ean tis himas erota, and if someone asks you de ate, what in the world are you doing? Why, for what reason, de ate, are you loosing? Hutos erete, thus you will say. This is what you should say. Hote. This is kind of an interesting use of hote here. Most kind of wrestle with whether this is a hote of indirect discourse or direct discourse, but others have actually considered the very real possibility that this is a causal hote. It would be direct discourse then, but what Jesus is saying to his two disciples is that they should say, because the Lord has need of it. Others have also wrestled with the rather interesting possibility that autu here, the personal pronoun, is modifying not kreon, but kurios. So it's not his need, but the Lord's colt. And the reason that they consider that possibility is the following context, where the colt is described as belonging to other lords, kurioi. So that's rather a rather interesting possibility here. Is Jesus' lordship being contrasted with the lordship of these others? Very interesting possibility. So with that in mind, we might just translate the hutte clause there, because its Lord has need. Verse 32. Apelthontes de hoi apestalmenoi huron kathos apen autois. This is a challenging one in terms of getting the temporal sequencing right. You have the substantival participle there, hoi apostolmenoi. The participle there is functioning as a noun, modified by the definite article hoi, and is the subject of huron. Those who had been sent, found, and then the first participle, apelthontes. What are you going to do with that thing? Again, a weasel translation is tempting because it kind of simplifies the problem. Departing, those who had been sent, found, just as he said to them, something like that. But you might wrestle a little bit with that first participle and consider the possibility of a temporal force to the participle, or just a participle kind of indicating a certain sequence of things. Those who had been sent, departed, and found, just what Jesus had described is the sense of the thing anyway. It's not easy. This particular verse is not easy to translate, especially because of the matter of good temporal sequencing, clearly indicating with your translation what happened first, according to the syntax of the sentence. Verse 33. L'anton de auton. Genitive, absolute. Probably here a temporal use of the genitive absolute. While they were loosing the colt, its lords, here are the other lord, here's the other use of kyrios in the text. Kind of interesting. Hoi kyrioi autu. Autu, the antecedent, is the colt. Its lords, apon, said to them, Ti luete, why are you loosing the colt? Verse 34. Hoi de apon. The definite article there is functioning as the subject of apon and recalls the previously mentioned masculine plural disciples, two disciples. They said, hote, here again, maybe causal, because the Lord of it has need or has need of it. It's kind of a difficult judgment call there. It'd be nice if we could preserve the possible ambiguity of the thing in an English translation, but English doesn't exactly provide us with this opportunity. Sure. Yes, that's the more common thing.
Need of, right?
Need of it, that is to say, of the colt, right? It's more common for translators to take the personal pronoun there as modifying need, crayon, right? Let's see. Verse 35. Kai egagon auton, and they led it to Jesus, pros ton Jesun. Kai epiripsantes. Epiripto means throw upon. Maybe just kind of a very simple sequence here indicated by the participle. And they led it to Jesus and they threw auton ta hemata, their garments, on it. On the polon, epiton polon, ep abib asan ton Jesun, and they placed Jesus on the colt. Parumenu de autu, another genitive absolute. While he was coming, hypestronuon, an imperfect from hypostronuo, they began, maybe the inceptive imperfect here, they began to strew their garments ente hado, in the way. And for Luke, the way is the salvific way of Jesus that takes him to the cross. So it's very interesting here. The disciples take their garments, these things indicative of them, and they put them on the colt and along the way. 37. Engidzontos de autu. Another, yet another genitive absolute. We got 5 more minutes? Two more minutes. Yeehaw. Okay. While he was approaching already to pros te katabase to aurus ton elion, to the descent, the place where the mount started to descend, slope down. In other words, Jesus has reached the peak of the mount. He's looking down upon Jerusalem to the west, he can see Jerusalem, and Jerusalem can see him. And then things start to break loose. Okay? Erksanta, hapanta, plethos, ton, matheton, the whole multitude of the disciples began to rejoice and praise God. Chirontes there is probably functioning in a similar fashion as the infinitive. Began to rejoice and praise God with a great voice concerning all, pason is modifying dunameon, all the miracles, and then hon adon in the middle there is adjectival, all the miracles which they had seen, saying, and finally we get to verse 38, which is challenging, blessed, perfect passive participle there, probably functioning as a predicate adjective, is the one who comes, the king, in the name of the Lord. Is that the coming king? Or is that the coming one, namely the king? I think we've got two sentences here, so I'd be inclined to translate it. Blessed is the coming king in the name of the Lord. In heaven there is peace and glory in the highest. Luke is the only one in offering up this reference to Psalm 118 in the mouths of the disciples now to indicate that they greeted him with aspirations of peace and glory. Is it entirely unique to Luke? The operative question is, what are the people, the disciples now in particular, seem to expect? What is Jesus doing to affirm yet also inform that expectation? Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to say things, but I would suggest that they're expecting a bit of a Messiah of power here, and there's a lot in this text to suggest that he is no such thing, that he is a humble servant Messiah. We should think of Zechariah 9. We might even think of Genesis 49, the blessing pronounced by Judah or by Jacob upon Judah, and the very important reference there to the colt, the foal of an ass tied to the vine, and the one who washes his garments in the blood of the grape, which sounds an awful lot like passion stuff to me. So I'll cut off at that. Thanks.